Hello and welcome. It's the College of Optometrists podcast with me, Martin Cordner, Head of Research at the College.
And me, Daniel Hodman-Huntley, Clinical Advisor at the College.
It's September, Daniel. How did that happen?
Where did it go? How was your summer?
As we record this halfway through the summer. Yeah, it was, I did everything I wanted to do.
It rained.
It did rain a bit, yes.
It mainly rained.
Right, yes. I mean, everything I aimed to do this summer, I definitely did. I cleaned out the house, I did the garden, I wrote that novel I was planning to write. I did, sometime between about the 2nd of August and now, I definitely wrote that novel.
A whole novel.
How was your holiday?
Holiday was good. It rained. Did I mention that? It rained.
You did.
So I think there'll be an epidemic of myopia. Children not going outside this summer, inside. It rained.
And all those celebrities that you saw on your holiday as well.
Many optometrists lead, celebrity lifestyle, beaches, fast cars, cocktail bars.
And who'd have thought you'd have saved so many of them from that burning building? What an incredible holiday you had.
Quite incredible, absolutely, Martin. But less said about that, the better.
Yes, we'll save that for a future edition. Anyway, what September definitely brings is National Eye Health Week. And there's something I'd like to read out about the aims of the week in case we're not entirely aware, if I may, which I think is particularly pertinent to our interview coming up. So, in case you're not aware, the National Eye Health Week aims to inspire and educate people on the importance of eye health and why they should go for regular sight tests. And now, it's hard to overestimate, I think, the importance of your local optometrist based on the interview that you did that we're going to hear. Isn't that right, Daniel?
That is right. It's actually quite quite a moving interview.
Mm-hmm.
We travel down to Exeter to speak to John, an optometrist who practices in Devon, and a really quite unexpected situation. So about 2 years ago, Neil was attacked in the street with what was, I guess, an unknown chemical, and it happened to be outside an optometrist practice. So rushed in to see John Campbell, his high street optometrist, who treated him as best he could.
Mm. So the interview you'll hear is Daniel speaking to Neil and John and recounting their memories and feelings on that day, along with hospital optometrist Kieran Loft explaining Neil's continuing treatment to deal with the ongoing effects of the attack. And I think it really is quite something. I mean, I was quite taken aback in listening to it. There's some issues I think that are worth flagging up right up top. So firstly, you know, when something like this happens, I think as an optometrist, presumably, you know you've been taught what to do when someone presents with chemicals in the eye or something like that. But the fact that the patient is coming in utter shock and is going through something that is sending them completely haywire emotionally is I think, was really came across.
Optometrists are trained how to treat an eye emergency, but it's not something most community optometrists would do on a regular basis.
And you can't really practice it, can you?
You can't really practice it. So to deal with the shock of the patient and the shock of yourself and the shock of the practice team is something that many optometrists can only really just imagine. And I think one of the really interesting things about this interview is actually this is the first time that the patient who had the attack met up with the optometrist who provided the initial emergency first aid treatment and the optometrist who actually, as it transpires, saved the sight in one of Neil's eyes.
Wow. I mean, there's also the fact that if that happens, you know, there's consequences that you're not quite aware of. I mean, the fact that there's a risk of contamination for the optometrist as well, but also the way that, you know, the training kicks in and there was, you know, as we'll hear, there's brilliant collaboration between the staff at the practice that, you know, until you're put in that position. Collaboration can mean one thing, but then in a position like that, it means something completely different.
While speaking to John, what struck me was the real compassion he had to help with the attack. And actually that just took over. He just wanted to do everything he could to save this man's sight. Mm. And so I have no doubt people will be very interested to find out what happened and how he managed that situation. And indeed, you know, you're presented with an acid attack. How do you protect yourself? How do you protect the practice staff? How do you decontaminate the practice afterwards? There's lots of things that certainly I hadn't even started to think about before listened to this situation.
Yeah, how do you deal with the consequences, the emotional consequences? Absolutely. I think we should come to the most important thing, though, which is what did you think of John's Maggie Woodhouse impression? I think it was quite unique, but it's growing on me.
No, I think it was fantastic. I think it was very good. Very good indeed.
Fair enough. Good all round. There we are.
We can do a little poll afterwards, perhaps, and
yes,
see what listeners
for
thought.
All those with... Yes, we have to... People have to self qualify and knowing what she sounds like and then say, yeah, okay, good, bad, okay. Yeah, okay, let's try that. It's worth adding that in this interview, there are some quite explicit details of the effects of the attack in the interview, just FYI. So as I double check that my nice big lethal bottle of saline is still with me, strap in, here's Daniel with Neil, John and Kieran.
Good afternoon, my name's Daniel Hardman-McCartney, clinical advisor to the College of Optometrists. And this afternoon we're here in a busy eye clinic in Exeter. And it's not often you get three optometrists in a room together, but we have indeed got three optometrists in a room along with a gentleman called Neil. Let me introduce who's here this afternoon. We've got John Campbell, optometrist.
Hello, hi.
We've got Kieran Loft, clinical editor and optometrist.
Hello.
And we've got Neil, our patient.
Good afternoon.
So let's start at the very beginning. So Neil, tell us about the events of January 2017.
Oh, it was just a normal day. I was walking down through the high street when suddenly this guy came sort of running out of this alleyway with a balaclava on, and I thought it was some sort of joke. So I thought, well, you know, didn't think much of it, looked straight at him. And as I looked at him, he raised this white canister and just squirted this, what I now know to be some sort of ammonia, into my face. Everything just went black. I could, you know, it just sort of clouded over. You didn't really hit you that what's happening. You think it's still some sort of joke and that something's, you know, someone's having a laugh. But I couldn't, I was just, my eyes, my mouth, my face was stinging. And I thought, well, what the hell's happened? There was a lady, I think it was a lady in the high street, and she said, she shouted out, quick, this guy's been attacked. Can I have some help here, please? I was sort of standing there, just dazed. And she said, we need to get him into the optometrist next, which was right next to the building I was just about to go into. So apparently there was two people that carried me in. And the next thing I know, I'm being, you know, I'm having my eyes swirled out with water, and there was this awful smell of ammonia. And from there on in, if it weren't for John, I think, you know, I would have lost sight in both my eyes. He managed to save the one eye, but the other eye was just too badly damaged.
So you'd just been carried into the optometry practice.
Yep.
What was going through your mind? What do you?
I thought, well, all I could hear was, well, we need to get him in here as quickly as we can. He's been attacked. And I thought, you know, then it was sort of, you were realising that something drastic had happened. You think, well, am I ever going to be able to see again? Because your eyes are just completely, everything's just black. And you know, you think, well, you're having your eyes swirled out. Is it the sight ever going to come back? Or
Were you able to keep your eyes open? Or
no.
And was it extreme pain?
It was extreme pain, yeah. It was really, you know, intense, really intense.
And so had this substance been sprayed just on your eyes or on your whole
face? It was all over my face. It was all over, yeah, all over my face. I mean, the guy, he didn't aim it anywhere else, just directly. So as soon as I looked at him, he sprayed it straight into my eyes.
You smell anything?
I could smell this, I know now it's ammonia, but it was hard to describe at the time. It was just an awful smell. But it was the fact of, well, what's happening? You know, your head's sort of in another place. You think, this isn't really happening to me. And then suddenly you think, well, hang on a minute, everything starts coming together. And you think, oh, I've been attacked. This is more serious than you think.
Were you scared or was there
fear? I was frightened to death, yeah. I mean, I have a heart condition anyway. And what all I could think about was, I'm going to have a massive heart attack in a minute, because this is really, you know, the shock of it was until John calmed things down, you know, was putting water in me and telling me to calm down and was taking my clothes off, and my shirt and my tie, they cut my tie off me and everything else. It was just, well, you just don't realise what's going on. It takes you quite a time to sort of collect all your thoughts.
Some people had carried you into...
A lady and a man had carried me into the shop. I mean, I wouldn't have been able to get into the shop on my own. If it hadn't have been outside the opticians, God knows what would have happened. I don't know how I would have coped or where I would have gone. If there'd been nobody around, I think now, you know, I would have just led there.
Let's move on to John. John, tell us what happened. So this person had been carried into your optometry practice, screaming, shouting.
Yeah, so basically I just came out with my previous patient, fairly routine, busy afternoon as usual. And then I walked out and dragged through the door, was a lady and a gent bringing, we now know as Neil, shouting he's had acid thrown in his eyes. That's the phrase they kept using, was he's had acid thrown in his eyes. The guy was in agony. I've never seen anything like it, and hopefully never will ever see anything like it again. He'd gone bright red and was blistering on his face. Obviously, we then immediately sort of loosened his shirt, and you had a tie on, I think, didn't you, Neil?
Yeah, I did.
And then we, we cut that off and, you know, cleared all the top clothing, which was saturated. So although did they spray it at you, Neil, or was it
They sprayed it. It was in like a fairy liquid bottle. So they sprayed it.
There was lots of volume there. It wasn't just a small amount. You know, talk about overkill. And I'd understand you'd been robbed or something. But I mean, that's obviously not something that I was... So we immediately then moved through to the consultant room fairly quickly, because it was fairly obvious we were going to have to remove clothing and things. Sat Neil down and grabbed a litre of saline, and within probably 2 or 3 minutes had soaked him in saline from top to bottom over his shirt and his neck. At this point, his skin on his face was starting to lift, particularly around his eyelids and whatnot, and that was coming away in my hands. He also had lots and lots of big welts and blisters that are up his upper torso, where it had gone on the top of his chest. Moving on to his eyes, there was no way in a million years he was going to open his eyes for me. He'd obviously slightly twisted his head to one side as the spray had come towards him, because one eye was much more affected than the other. And that eye had turned to pulp, basically. It was like looking at sort of like paper mache, the cornea on that eye. And then the cornea floated off and soon disappeared. Going to the other eye, that one was less affected. Cornea again was white, and the front surface was starting to lift. So we did both eyes, but we concentrated more on the one eye that was less affected. I had a fantastic DO with me who earned her salary that day, that's for sure. So she sort of knelt on Neil's chest and ripped his head back. And then between the two of us, we managed to get the eyes open. And again, emptied another litre of saline into the eyes. My receptionist had phoned the police, and a kind of community support officer came wandering across.
What's going on?
Remember that? And then he phoned it in. And it probably took, I reckon, 15 minutes for someone serious to arrive. Meanwhile, we had you pinned... And you were worried about your heart. You kept on saying, I'm going to have a heart attack to me. So we just kept on concentrating. And then most of the face was starting to come away by this point. And one of your ears as well. And that's when your ears started to go as well.
My right ear, yeah.
Yeah. So eventually the police arrived. And to be perfectly honest, they shouted at me because I was treating you, which is bizarre. And then they forced me to put on these blue glove things. By that point, I noticed my hands had started to blister and peel as well. So they were quite right. And I think I was a little bit high on fumes as well, which we obviously, by that point, I think we'd realised it wasn't acid and it was some sort of alkali, but well, now we know it was ammonia. We didn't know that at the time. And they wanted all of our clothing, which might be told them no, and just kept on treating. And obviously an ambulance was called, which in hindsight was the end point, that when this ambulance arrived, I could stop going at 100 miles an hour, expecting that to be 10, 15 minutes. And unfortunately, the ambulance never arrived, and we ended up treating you for almost 2 hours, and eventually giving a crash course to a young police officer to treat you on the back of a squad car all the way to the hospital. So, hopefully, we did some use, but just wish we could have done both eyes and not just the one eye, but sometimes that's the way of the world.
I think you saved my sight, John. There's no getting away from it. I mean, it's fantastic what you did at the time. And, you know, I'm really appreciative of it.
John, I'm interested to hear the police shouted at you. So were they telling you what to stop or to so they could collect evidence, or did they not realise the severity of the injuries?
I think twofold, really. One, they were junior police officers arrived initially. Eventually, when the sergeants and the inspectors arrived later on, they were much more with it. One was destroying the evidence, of course, you know, to see what by this point we couldn't, all you could smell, yourself, saline's got a certain smell, alkali, acid, nobody knew, we all know this in hindsight, at the time we didn't know any of this, and, you know, my training always was to sort of, first of all, report something, and then, just make sure someone's coming, hence in this case an ambulance or not, and then to remove the actual abrading substance, which now we know is alkali, and then rinse, it doesn't matter what you've got, I mean, water, alkali, doesn't matter. In this case we had bottles and bottles of saline being an active practice, and now I won't go to a practice unless I've got my bottle of saline and my protective gloves with me. Stupid thing to have to do, but that's the way of the world, isn't it, really? end of the day. But I think they were quite mad that, one, I was damaging myself, which I had to be perfectly honest, until they said that, I hadn't realised that. And Carolina had a bit of blistering as well, because she was, you know, helping me hold Neil in position, because he was literally writhing around in agony. So I don't know what the ambulance crew would have done differently.
I don't think you would have done any more than what you did, to be honest.
You down maybe,
no, I don't think so. I think, you know, you knew what you were doing. I mean, I think I got better support from you, John, than I would have if the ambulance had turned up. So
I guess we're trained for this as undergraduates, and hopefully never have to use this. But most of the time, it's removing eyelashes, not removing ammonia from eyes. But it's nice to know the training kicks in when it matters.
So what were you thinking throughout this, John? Were you thinking about a logical kind of treatment, or had you just gone into kind of autopilot? I need to just rinse and rinse. Yeah. Or
all I can remember was my lecturer from university, a lady called Maggie Woodhouse, from Cardiff, just saying, just get the saline in there. And that's all I can remember. It was just rinse, rinse, rinse. And I mean, it doesn't matter whether it's alkali, it doesn't matter whether it's acid, it doesn't matter whether it's concrete. I've done one of those before. It's just literally just rinse, 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 really. And my thoughts really were pinning the patient down so I could get it in there. And I mean, we're not talking just, you know, gently lift your lids. This was absolute brute force, forcing it forward. And also, it's coming back to me now, for some reason, Neil's tongue had a huge reaction to the alkali, and it swelled up and was almost as big as your mouth. So he was struggling to breathe. And obviously, we could only see the front of the tongue, but one assumes this was happening at the back of the throat as well. So we had some breathing problems. And I can remember thinking, the ambulance will be in a minute, and they'll do that thing they do on ER where they stick something down their throat. You know, I'm sure we've all seen that on the television. Obviously, that didn't happen.
It didn't happen.
But yes.
Lucky you didn't need it, really.
Mm. And you were with your dispensing optician.
Dispensing optician, Carolina, and she was fantastic. She's a fantastic Polish lady, and she sort of almost had that pragmatic approach, let's get it in there kind of thing, which is good. She didn't panic. She didn't, you know, again, her training kicking in. And our receptionist was out the front fending off patients, because, of course, the patients had to get sent away. There's no way we could see those.
I think that's really key, isn't it? Just, like you say, get it in there.
Yeah.
And if you've got to use a bit of force to do it, so be it.
Yeah.
And saline, of course, is best. It's great that you had that to hand, but in those kind of circumstances, water will suffice, even tap water.
Yeah.
It's just really important to get rid of the offending substance.
Yeah, I mean, if I can pass anything on to any other optometrist, is to have a nice big litre bottle of saline always on hand, and to have some of those disposable gloves that the ambulance guys use, or DIY stores, I think you can get them, can't you? And just have them to protect. So I didn't do that, which is very foolish, but in hindsight, you know, it doesn't really matter, does it, at the end of the day? I suppose I'd have felt different if it had been some sort of abrasive acid, but... good. I didn't have any fingerprints for about 2 weeks, which was about handy. I got away with anything. But yeah, that was quite good. But I mean, by towards the end of it, most of Neil's skin on his face and certainly his cornea had come off, and one of his ears was kind of blistering badly as well. So I'm looking at him now, thinking, what a healthy specimen.
Yeah.
At that point, I thought he'd have no face. You know, like one of these sort of war victims, you see, because that's how it looked at the time.
So, John, what happened? So you're in a police car, a junior police officer is spraying saline at you, and they're taking you to the local hospital.
Yeah, all I can think
can
about...
Can you remember it?
Yeah, I can remember going through sort of traffic lights and things like that, and thinking, just hurry up and just get us there. And then I was thinking about my family. I thought, well, what happens if I don't... I'm never going to see my wife again. I'm not going to be able to see again. Or, you know, what am I going to do? How am I going to get to work? And it's all stupid things like that that go through your head. And once it hits home that that's what's happening, you think, where's this going to end? I mean, I could see out of the left eye, so I could see where we were going, what was happening, and I didn't realise the seriousness of the right eye. So, but yeah, that's the sort of things you get through your head is, well, what's going to happen now? Where do we go from here?
And were you in hospital for a few weeks afterwards?
No, I didn't stay in hospital at all. I mean, I stayed in that day. They cut all my clothes off me when I got in there. And then somebody was just swelling my eye out constantly when I was in the hospital. They were concerned about my tongue because my tongue had swelled up. You know, I was having a job to breathe. So they gave me some sort of antibiotic or something to get that to go down. But then I was in there for about 6 hours, I think. And then they sent me home. They said, just come back again tomorrow. You need to come back tomorrow. So I then attended the hospital for about 2 weeks every day.
Was that just for the eyes? Or there
just for the eye, and well? I think to check on everything else, you know?
And was there any other support open to you throughout that 2 weeks, that period, in terms of, you know, counselling support or general health support or dermatology?
I didn't take any support. No, I didn't take anything. I'm in the NHS. I just continue to go to the NHS. They know what they were doing. I mean, Mr. Knox Cartwright, the leading man there, knew he's on the case. You know, he knows what he was doing. And, you know, well looked after. So, yeah, fantastic.
And so after, you said, a couple of weeks of going every day, yeah. It then went down to once a week?
It was once a week for about a month. And then it's went to once every 3 weeks, and now I'm attending once every 4 weeks. So it's still ongoing.
So yeah, just for our listeners, the ongoing management now is basically bandage contact lenses to keep Neil's right eye comfortable, because it's still not fully settled. We've got limbal stem cell failure, just subtotal, so he's got about 1 or 2 clock hours of healthy limbus. It's interesting to hear John's account, actually, because I only came into Neil's care quite late on, probably a year after the initial assault. And hearing all of that, actually, the recovery has been remarkable, because if the cornea was in the state it was, I'm surprised there wasn't a total melt and loss of eye, to be honest. So John did an amazing job to irrigate as much as he did. So, yeah, now the situation isn't ideal. Vision's about, 660, and... reliant on bandage contact lenses, which have to be changed every 3 or 4 weeks still. So that's the situation now. Some treatment has been offered, hasn't it? And tried, even. So an amniotic membrane was tried, yeah. But that didn't really make much difference, did it?
No, not at all.
No. And then the other major sort of treatment later down the line, once that acute phase is over, is a limbal stem cell transplant. Where usually stem cells are taken from the healthy eye, it always works best if it's from the same patient rather than using donor tissue, because the risk of rejection is so much lower. But Neil decided not to risk the other eye, especially that it had some mild chemical injury.
I mean, I can live with the sight in one. You can live quite well with sight in one eye, and the other eye, you know, it's the pain that once the cap is taken out of the eye, the pain is unbearable. You can't sleep. You can't do anything, because it's just like having something in your eye rubbing all the time, stinging and running. So as soon as the cap's put in place, everything settles down. But then after 2 or 3 weeks, the cap starts to get sore, because it's stuck in there all the time. So then I have to keep going back to Curran to change it over, and then we go through the process again. I'm not happy to have stem cells taken out of my good eye, because, you know, I could risk the sight in that eye as well. So at the moment, this is the way it's got to be.
Neil, you met Curran, it was about a year after yep. the incident, and Curran has been managing okay. the hospital optometry side of things with the bandage contact lens.
Yes, which Neil calls a cap.
A cap, yeah. Yep. Okay. So, Kieran, is that going to be ongoing now and definitely into the future?
It looks like it. We sort of have periodic discussions with Mr. Knox Cartwright, the corneal consultant, and really, unless there's lots of research going on, which is interesting research about delivering stem cells via contact lenses, actually. So, we've heard a lot about stem cells in recent months and years, and hopefully. The stem cell treatments will continue to improve, and it might be that we get to a stage where we can use stem cells from another source more reliably, and we wouldn't have to risk the other eye. But at the moment, I think we're just managing the pain side of things with the bandage contact lens, and that looks like a long-term treatment now.
I mean, we're hoping that every time we take the contact lens out, I mean, we do sometimes, we say we'll walk around the hospital for 3 or 4 hours and see if you can bear it, Karen, don't we?
Yeah.
Things like that. And you can stand it for a couple of hours, but you couldn't constantly live like it, you know? So, I mean, it's getting a little bit easier, but it's not right. So the contact lens at the moment, the bandage lens, is the best option. I couldn't bear not going without it, to be quite honest with you.
And how has the vision come up in the other eye? Because that eye was opaque when I last...
So the left eye, the good eye, as we call it, it's come up really well, actually. So there's a 6-6 after refraction, so...
6-6?
6-6. So, yeah, couldn't be better, really. Okay. So, yeah, really saved that one.
Yeah, because that was completely opaque when he left us. So, you know, the other one wasn't there. There was no cornea, but, you know, there was no useful cornea. But, yeah. Oh, fantastic. That's worth it.
John, from your point of view, when Neil left the practice and you're there with the aftermath, how did you shut practice the day? Or
it would be nice, wouldn't it? we had about, at that point, probably 50 police officers trawling all over us. They cordoned off the town because, obviously, as Kevin mentioned, there was a robbery at the same time. They wanted evidence from everything. The most important thing they're after were Neil's clothes to try, because at that point we didn't know what the substance was, and of course that was vital for the hospital to know that for the treatment side of things. And then suddenly there was a sighting of the robbers, so to speak, and half the police officers disappeared with the blue lights going. Just to know for they did get caught, which was rather nice and put away. Not that affects any of this, but it probably does in the bigger picture. But yeah, so it was just chaos, and then we got interviewed, and then we had detectives, inspectors coming for weeks afterwards, and then we had to give evidence. Luckily, they accepted written evidence, so we didn't have to go into court. And then eventually, bizarrely, Carolina and myself received a bravery and award from the police about a year later, which, to be fair, was horrible when it came along, because at that point I put it all away in a compartment of my brain that I didn't want to access again. And suddenly it was all being dredged out in front of a crowd, and it was horrible, to be perfectly honest. It's nice to have the award and all the rest of it, but I almost would rather not have had to drag it all back out here. But now it's back out again, it's probably in a better place, and I think psychologically it's better to talk about things like we are today than just lock it all away.
It must be nice to see Neil today.
Oh,
well.
Lovely seeing him so well.
Yeah. I keep saying things, I must go back now, I just cannot bring myself to walk down that high street again, you know, at the moment anyway. I mean, it's affected my life. Well, it's ruined my life, really, because I don't do half the things that I used to do. And I'm wary, you know, in public places, I'm wary. I'm always looking around. You know, my wife comes with me most places I go to, or my son. It's just been hell. It's been 2 years of hell.
Was there any kind of victim support?
There was no. I mean, there was nothing. There's, you know, the company offered me some sort of support, but it didn't materialise. And I found it in the beginning difficult to talk about anyway, so it was best to sort of, you know, you just want to sort of put it behind you. So
Well, I felt the same. I didn't really want people to try to talk about it. I don't really want to talk about it. Thank you very much. But yeah, I say this has been quite therapeutic today.
It's good. It's good.
John, would you have any advice to optometrists out there to prepare for the situation? If you can impart any wisdom from going through the experience of treating it.
I mean, the classic is the three R's, which is report, remove, the offending article, and rinse. The main thing is rinse, really. From our point of view, the report, it brought police officers, but it didn't bring any medical help whatsoever. And the remove bit, I think, as we could physically see as we were removing things, it was stopping the affected skin being affected, particularly the shirt and the tie, because the neck was starting to bubble up as well. That's what I would say. In the practice, be aware that anything could happen, always have a nice big litre bottle of saline, you know, on rotation, keeping it in date and all the rest of it, and have some protective stuff for yourself. I know I didn't, but in hindsight now, I always keep them in my briefcase so I can always grab them. And just have an open mind, really. I mean, we're taught, you know, pop it on the soot lamp, have a look at it and all the rest of it. In this case, I don't think I'd have got you to sit in a chair, never mind about a soot lamp. So you just don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. You know, you read all these various things about paper cuts and all the rest of it. What's tomorrow going to bring? Who knows?
I was interested in you saying about the assessment of the eyes. So presumably you were just making that assessment just naturally on the floor as you were irrigating.
Very much so. I mean, we're talking, you know, it was very, very obvious. You know, as I was pushing down on the skin and moving my hands away from me, and my hands were covered in Neil's skin, it was coming away actually in my hands. So, you know, you're trying to hold someone down, but the skin's slipping off the forehead, for example. So this is why looking at Neil now, how amazing he looks, because, you know, genuinely I thought he was going to look like some sort of burns victim, really, and he doesn't. He looks fantastic. I'm amazed that the good eye, so to speak, has come up so well, because I was expecting the good eye to be a 660 and the right eye to have to be removed. So the fact that what's happened at the hospital is well, as Kieran said, I'm amazed. Yeah. Absolutely amazed.
I say it's all down to the irrigation, really. Yeah. So,
yeah, don't underestimate how you just keep going. And I think the policeman covered you, didn't he, by the sounds of things as well. So that's good.
Yeah.
I think we'd ran out of Ceylon. We had 6 boxes of litre Ceylons. I think they all went. So, you know, with various bits and bobs. So there's your key.
And Karen, in terms of, so from a hospital perspective, if you had advice to members of the public, so not optometrists, who might, you know, be presented on the high street with a chemical attack like this, any advice that you'd want to share with members of the public?
The same advice that we give to the optometrists, really, just irrigate, get fluid in there to rinse the offending substance out as quickly as possible. Yes, saline, sterile saline is obviously ideal, but if you don't have that on hand, tap water is better than nothing. So just irrigate, 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 and keep irrigating until the ambulance or help arrives.
Neil, presumably ongoing now, you're going to be seeing Kieran every month.
I look forward to it.
Yeah.
yeah, see him every month, and we'll just continue with the process, and hopefully, you know, one day we take the cap out and we'll be able to say, yes, well, you can bear it, you can stand that now. You know, I'm never going to get the sight back in my eye. I've resolved myself to that fact. But it's just I'll keep going with the constant treatment until we get there. It's got to get better. It can't get any worse, can it?
Absolutely. So, Neil, I want to thank you very much for sharing your story with us. And I know listeners, to have an insight like that is really quite something. And hopefully some good can come of this by just sharing the experience and what members of the public and maybe optometrists can do to help people if they're ever in a similar situation. So if I can thank you in particular.
It's a pleasure.
And John and Kieran, both optometrists supporting this Neil.
Thank you.
Wow. So there it is. Thank you to Neil, John and Kieran for sharing their story. And well done, Daniel. How did you feel after recording that?
It was a really emotional afternoon, actually. It was actually a kind of therapy almost to listen to Neil talk about his experience and also for John as well to actually come and put closure on the event, having, you know, I think 2 years had passed from when it had happened. And for me, it's quite humbling to hear 2 optometrists involved with the treatment of Neil, both the emergency first aid treatment and now, of course, the ongoing treatment through bandaged contact lenses and potentially future grafts involved, the optometrists, you know, for Neil, an optometrist saved his sight and is critical to his ongoing well-being and continued sight.
Did it make you feel different about being an optometrist?
It reminded me why I wanted to be an optometrist, to help people.
Cool. Yes, that's a good thing. So, for more information and guidance on this issue, maybe the best thing to do is probably just to repeat the word rinse endlessly until you see it in your sleep. I think, you know, I mean, I genuinely mean that. That's what I'm going to do anyway.
Okay, so that's your lot from today, you lucky devils. Next time, Martin will be speaking to Jasleen Jolly, optometrist and NIHR clinical research doctoral fellow at the University of Oxford, about gene therapy and the tackling of inherited retinal diseases.
Well said. As ever, if you'd like to get in touch, please do at podcasts@college-optometrists.org. And please rate, review and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. But for now, from me, Daniel, and my big old bottle of saline, it's goodbye.